Ezekiel 35. Ezekiel has already delivered one prophecy against Edom in chapter 25, and the notes given at that point in the exposition showing history fulfilling prophecy and Edom's downfall provide a background for an understanding of this further prophecy against Israel's inveterate enemy. It is pertinent to ask why, at this point in his prophecies, when he has commenced talking about Israel's future restoration, Ezekiel should here deliver this new and more extensive prophecy against Edom. It may well be that the prophet had become aware of the treachery of the Edomites and the events associated with the fall of Jerusalem brought about by Nebuchadnezzar. Edom took advantage of Nebuchadnezzar's invasion of Judah to pursue their own territorial ambitions. Compare that with Obadiah, verses 10 to 14. In the light of this, it may well be that he was moved by the Spirit to pronounce afresh the doom of Esau's descendants, just as Jeremiah, at roughly the same time, was also moved to predict this coming judgment on Edom. The punishment of thine iniquity is accomplished, O daughter of Zion. He will no more carry thee away into captivity. He will visit thine iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will discover thy sins. That's in Lamentations chapter 4. But even if this be the case, the prophet is not digressing from the theme of restoration introduced in chapter 34. The Edomites were saying, "These two nations and these two countries shall be mine. They are laid desolate. They are given us to consume." How could Israel be restored unless the enemy which laid false claim to the land be removed? Ezekiel has spoken of the time when Israel would no more be a prey to the heathen. And in the remaining chapters, the theme of restoration is continued, but that restoration would involve the judgment of Israel's immediate enemies, and also the judgment of those nations that would come from afar against God's land. During Jacob's sojourn in Padan Aram, Esau, who is Edom, began to move towards the land of Seir. When Jacob settled in the land, Esau completed his move to Mount Seir. Moses confirms that Edom and Seir are identical when, at the end of the wilderness journey, he reminds Israel that the Lord destroyed the children of Esau which dwelt in Seir. And there is an appropriateness in the designation of Esau as Edom and Seir. At his birth, we are told that the first came out red all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. The word red in the Hebrew is Adam, identical to Edom in the original unpointed Hebrew text. And the word hairy in the Hebrew is Seir, identical to Seir in the unpointed text. And although Esau was called Edom because of the red, or the Hebrew Adam, pottage for which he sold his birthright, that he came ultimately to dwell in the land of red sandstone with its rough, that is, Seir, landscape, was surely no coincidence. Today, the land of Edom is a mountainous and mostly arid country, but at that time it must have contained areas that were fertile and well watered. We read that Esau took their cattle, beasts, and his substance. Years later, when Israel wanted to pass through the land of Edom on their way from Egypt to the land of promise, it was described as possessing fields, vineyards, and wells. Ezekiel is told to set thy face against Mount Seir and prophesy against it. And so it would be to this land, inhabited by the descendants of Esau, the Edomites, that the prophet turned his gaze. The land at that time was indeed inhabited by the Edomites, as indicated in verse 15, where it is referred to as Idumea, which is equivalent to the land of Edom. And it is with these Edomites, the descendants of Esau, that most of the prophecy is concerned. The same terrible judgments are pronounced on Mount Seir that we have seen earlier proclaimed against Edom. God is going to make it desolate, cutting off from it him that passeth out and him that returneth. And all this was to happen because of the perpetual hatred manifested by the inhabitants of Mount Seir towards their brothers, the people of Israel. And Ezekiel is particularly concerned with the behavior of the Edomites during their more recent history. It is clear that when the Babylonians invaded Israel, the Edomites helped forward the affliction. Therefore, the prophet directs attention particularly to the way in which they had shed the blood of the children of Israel by force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. This reference to the time when their iniquity had an end reminds us of the words addressed to Zedekiah, the last king of Judah, when he was warned of the fate that awaited him and his nation at the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. "Thou profane, wicked prince of Israel, whose day is come when iniquity shall have an end." Thus the use of these words indicates that Ezekiel's graphic description of the behavior of the Edomites has reference to the time of the Babylonian invasion. And Obadiah speaks of this same attitude manifested by Edom at the time of Israel's overthrow by Nebuchadnezzar as follows: "For thy violence against thy brother Jacob of shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. For thou shouldst not have looked on the day of thy brother, in the day that he became a stranger. Neither shouldst thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldst thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Thou shouldst not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldst not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldst thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldst thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress." Psalm 137 likewise speaks of this behavior of Edom. "Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. And the punishment of Edom for this treachery was certain." When the instrument of Edom's judgment was in the first instance to be Nebuchadnezzar, according to Josephus, invaded that region in the 23rd year of his reign, and the work was completed by the Romans in AD 70. Ezekiel's contemporary, Jeremiah, had also foretold the desolation of Edom. "Edom shall be a desolation, everyone that goeth by it shall be astonished." Jeremiah did not name the nation that would bring about this judgment of Edom. He described it in his 49th chapter as a nation that would come up as a lion, and also that would come and fly as the eagle. Interestingly, both these descriptions fit the nation that Moses predicted would invade Israel in Deuteronomy 28. There can be no doubt that Jeremiah intends us to understand that just as Nebuchadnezzar invaded Israel, so also would the king of Babylon be the instrument of God's judgment upon Edom. But the fact that no name is mentioned leaves it open to a possible further fulfillment. Thus, although Nebuchadnezzar greatly weakened Edom, essentially destroying it as a power and placing the Nabatean Arabs in Petra, it was in fact the Romans who, fulfilling Deuteronomy 28, and compare this with Matthew 24:28, came against Israel as swift as the eagle flyeth, and who brought about the extinction of the Edomites. And thus the Edomites passed from the pages of history in the first century AD, But there are clear indications that at the time of the end, there is to exist a nation referred to in the prophecies as Edom that will occupy a geographical relationship with Israel. And it will help us to appreciate the message of Ezekiel 35 and 36. If the other scriptures that speak of Edom at the time of the end are now examined briefly. In Isaiah 11, which speaks of the work to be performed by the rod out of the stem of Jesse, it tells of the time when he shall set up an ensign for the nations and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. It is against this background of Israel's regathering that the prophet declares, they, that is Israel, shall fly upon the shoulders of the Philistines towards the west, and they shall spoil them of the east together. They shall lay their hand upon Edom and Moab. The children of Ammon shall obey them. Thus, at the time of Israel's regathering, there will be people spoken of here as Edom that will be linked to a geographical locality, that is, east of the regathered people of Israel. Whether the opposition against Israel referred to in Psalm 83 had its historical basis in the Assyrian invasion of Judah in the time of Hezekiah, in the invasion during the reign of Jehoshaphat, or more likely at the time of Shishak's invasion of Judah, is only of passing interest in the context of this study, and there can be little doubt that it has a latter day fulfillment. And the following points are important. Psalm 83 speaks of a time when Israel is in the land. It deals with events that lead to the situation where the nations come to acknowledge Yahweh as the Most High over all the earth. It is reasonable to conclude that the psalm is concerned with events that overtake the regathered nation surrounded by hostile nations who say, let us cut them off from being a nation. Thus, at the time of which the psalmist speaks, Israel is referred to as a nation. By definition, this word denotes a people politically and territorially organized. The nations mentioned who desire to exterminate the nation of Israel are largely Semitic peoples, certainly nations that historically have a close geographical relationship with Israel. And the list, which is headed by Edom, is as follows. The tents of Edom, the Ishmaelites, Moab, the Hagarenes, Gebel, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, Tyre, and Asher. See the map on the next page. The only point that we seek to make here is that in the events of the time of the end, a number of nations are seen to be antagonistic towards Israel. And one of these, perhaps significantly mentioned first, is Edom. Now the map, entitled The Enemies of Israel in Psalm 83, shows Israel, the Philistines to the west and to the south, Amalek, Gebel and Edom, and to the east, Moab, and going north, Ammon, and further to the east, the Hagarenes and Ishmaelites and Asher, and of course, way up in the north, Tyre. Obadiah, missed something out. Finally, it is pertinent to note what the Psalm 83 does not say. The intention of these mainly Semitic nations towards Israel is to cut them off from being a nation. It does not say that they succeeded, or even nearly succeeded in fulfilling their ambition. The Psalm simply indicates that these nations who sought to do such a thing to Israel, their neighbor, would be severely punished. Now Obadiah. We have already drawn attention to the fact that Obadiah sets out in detail the disgraceful conduct of Edom in the past and declares a message of judgment against Edom, similar to that pronounced by Ezekiel. Every one of the Mount of Esau shall be cut off by slaughter, and the judgment will be visited on Edom because of her attitude towards Israel and for violence against thy brother Jacob. Verse 10. in particular because of the violence in the day of a calamity when strangers carried away captive his forces. And as we have seen, history shows that this desolation upon Edom was accomplished. Then Obadiah, using the same words as Joel chapter 2 in the RV, speaks of the preservation of a remnant of Israel. In Mount Zion, it shall be those that escape, and it shall be holy. According to Joel 2, this escaping occurred in that period of Israel's history when God poured out his spirit, showed wonders in the heavens and earth of Israel's political organization, and God turned to the Gentiles. Whosoever, that is, Jew or Gentile, shall call on the name of the Lord. It was in the apostolic period that these things happened. The Spirit was poured out, the Gentiles were offered salvation, and the Mosaic system was dissolved as Israel's commonwealth came to an end. But the destruction was not absolute. Some of Israel's flesh survived the Roman Holocaust in AD 70, as Jesus said they would. Matthew 24:22. They've been passing through the fire of affliction for nigh on 2,000 years, but God is working mightily with them. And Joel, having spoken of those that escape, spans the centuries and proceeds to speak of those days and at that time when the Lord shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. And Obadiah is speaking of this same restoration of Israel's fortunes. When he says concerning those that escape, they shall possess their possessions. That's the NASB version. It is after this mention of the return of the Jews to the land that the prophet speaks of another desolation of Edom. The house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them, and there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau. And this raises a point which is not noted in Ezekiel 35, that the desolation of this latter-day Edom is to be brought about by the house of Jacob. The judgment on the Edom of history was not accomplished by Israel, unless we accept that the subjugation of the declining Idumean nation by John Hyrcanus in 128 BC fulfilled the prophecy. Nebuchadnezzar and Nabataeans and Rome were the instruments of Edom's judgment. And this tends to confirm the suggestion made in the exposition earlier that the earlier prophecies of Ezekiel against the nations round about Israel have not as yet received their entire fulfillment. For there too it was said of Edom, I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel. That's Ezekiel 25 verse 14. And now Zechariah 12. In this chapter, Zechariah commences a series of prophecies which have to do with a period of time in the world's history styled That Day. It is in that day that Jerusalem will be besieged by a confederacy of Gentile nations when Yahweh's feet will stand upon the Mount of Olives, which will then be divided by an earthquake, and when eventually the Lord shall be king over all the earth. And one of the events in the program of that day is described in verse 6 of Zechariah 12. In that day I will make the governors of Judah like an hearth of fire among the wood and like a torch of fire in a sheaf, and they shall devour all the people round about on the right hand and on the left. Although the names of the nations devoured by the governors of Judah are not given, they're described as the people round about. a phrase that we've already demonstrated relates to the immediate neighbors of Israel, which includes Edom. See that map again. It is of interest to note here that the effect of the burning up of these people round about is that Jerusalem is inhabited again in her own place. That is, the people that belong in Jerusalem shall inhabit it. Daniel 11, speaking of the invasion of Israel by the king of the north, Daniel says, "He shall enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon." Quite clearly, in this prophecy, Edom refers to a nation in existence at the time of the Gentile invasion of Israel and its association with Moab and Ammon. Again, suggest a location east of Israel. Footnote here, the writer believes the king of the north in Daniel 11 to be the same power as Ezekiel's Gog, or the land of Gog, Magog. Isaiah 63. Here we simply note that the prophet speaks of the one who cometh from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah in the year of his redeemed. Well, unless Edom refers to a geographical location, the words are meaningless. In Joel 3, this prophecy has to do with events subsequent to the time when God begins the work of bringing again the captivity of Judah. Bringing again the captivity, according to the NASB, they have, that is, restores the fortunes, restoring the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem. It is the time when the might of the Gentiles is brought into collision with the Lord who roars from Zion and utters his voice from Jerusalem. The result of all this is that when Yahweh comes to dwell in his holy mountain, Judah is blessed. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom shall be a desolate wilderness. For the violence against the children of Judah, because they have shed innocent blood in their land. Again, it is difficult to see in this reference to Edom anything other than a reference to a people at the time of the end, which has an antagonistic attitude towards Israel, identical to that attitude manifested by Edom of old towards God's people. And Isaiah 34, when this prophecy, which speaks of the desolation of Edom, should be viewed as being one prophecy with Isaiah 35, which proceeds to speak of the restoration of Israel. It gives a picture of utter political devastation. "All the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and all their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falleth off from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree." This allusion to the vine and the fig tree may well be a reference to the nation of Israel, which is spoken of as a vine and as a fig tree. For Edom to be subjected to a judgment compared to the leaf falling from the vine and as the falling fig from the fig tree is a way of saying that Edom will suffer a fate in the future comparable to that suffered by Israel in the past. To continue from Isaiah then, verses 4 and 5, chapter 34, verses 4 and 5, "For my sword shall be bathed in heaven, behold, it shall come down upon Idumea," revised version Edom, "and upon the people of my curse to judgment." And this judgment to be poured out upon Edom is said to be the day of the Lord's vengeance and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. The utter desolation that ensues, the perpetual burning of Edom with fire and brimstone, is clearly a depiction of political devastation. The prophet proceeds to say, emphasizing its desolation, "The pelican and porcupine shall possess it, and the owl and the raven shall dwell therein." This could hardly be so if the land were literally aflame continually. Similarly, thorns, nettles, and brambles growing in the strongholds of Edom, jackals, ostriches, wild beasts of the desert, wolves, he-goats, screech owls, arrow snakes, and vultures would not flourish in a land that was literally burning perpetually. In summary, the prophet says he shall stretch upon it the line of confusion, tohu is the Hebrew, and the plummet of emptiness, the Hebrew is bohu. Here he uses words employed to describe the state of things before God began the work of creation. The earth was waste, Hebrew tohu, and void, Hebrew bohu. Opinions differ as to the approximate historical fulfillment of this prophecy, and the most appropriate would appear to be the Babylonian judgment of Edom, which was later completed by the Romans, as we have seen in Jeremiah and Obadiah. Certainly the Edom of history being totally destroyed could fittingly be described in the terms of utter devastation used here by Isaiah. So footnote here, some, for example, H.A. Whitaker and Isaiah maintain that it refers to the time of the Assyrian invasion of Judah during the days of Hezekiah. However, it is difficult to see that this would have produced such a devastation of Edom as that described here. To continue. However, the use of the words, it is the day of the Lord's vengeance and the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion, coupled with a comparison of Edom's desolation with Israel's restoration, when God will come with vengeance to save Israel, suggests a reference to latter day events. And thus the desolation of Edom, briefly mentioned by Joel in chapter 3 verse 19, is here pictured in bold and graphic detail. And its relevance to Ezekiel 35 is clear. Isaiah 34's prophecy of the utter desolation of Edom, which is linked to the wonderful picture of Israel's restoration in Isaiah 35, is paralleled by Ezekiel's description of Edom's desolation in chapter 35, which is similarly linked to a picture of Israel's restoration in chapter 36. The identity of Edom. Isaiah 34 raises a problem, the resolution of which is crucial for an understanding of the prophecies about Edom, and it is appropriate that this now be addressed. Although the prophet's message of judgment concerns Edom, yet he says, "Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people, for the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury is upon their armies, for my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, he shall come down upon Idumea," Edom in the Revised Version, "and upon the people of my curse to judgment." And the clear association of Edom with a geographical location which emerges from the other scriptures considered above, and this association of Edom with all nations has provided expositors with a considerable challenge. Thus, C.C. Walker identified the geographical Edom with a British presence in that area. "We recognize in Britain's occupation of these ancient territories the Edom and Moab at the time of the end," an idea which he borrowed from John Thomas in Eureka, volume 3, page 603, and in Elpis Israel, page 444. However, the Edom nations are said to be the European powers who are to make war upon Christ at his coming. The desolation of Edom speaks not only of the past, but of the overthrow that awaits the great anti-Jewish world of the latter days. again, C.C. Walker in his book on Isaiah, and J. Thomas in Eureka, where Edom is said to represent the beast and his image. But from the standpoint of the end of the 20th century, this seems like expositional eccentricity. But at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, it was an honest attempt to accommodate the prophecies to the political situation then extant. Clearly, the ideas were misguided. Although Britain's change in circumstances has forced most to rethink the identity of the geographical Edom, the idea persists that the Edom nations represent the aggregate of European Gentile power that will oppose Christ. The equating of Edom with the European Gentile power hostile to Christ depends on identifying the nations of Isaiah 34 verses 1 and 2 and Obadiah 16 with these Gentiles. And this idea would appear to be faulted by the following. 1. It is clear that Edom refers both to a geographical location and to a people. The desolation of Edom mentioned in Joel 3 and elaborated in Ezekiel 35-36, Isaiah 34 and Obadiah is an event that occurs in the same period of times as the judgment of the Gentile confederacy of nations that comes against Israel. But in Joel it is mentioned as something independent and separate from the judgment of those nations. And when the nations receive their judgment, then Edom and Egypt will also receive theirs. See Joel 3, verses 9 and 14, and compare with verse 19. The phrase all nations cannot be taken in every place where it occurs to refer to the totality of Gentile power. Each occurrence must be interpreted in its immediate and its wider scriptural context. We have seen in Ezekiel 25-28, and in Psalm 83 and Zechariah 12, for example, that Edom is frequently linked with the other nations round about Israel. It would seem reasonable to interpret the all nations of Isaiah 34 and Obadiah as referring to all the nations round about Israel. That is, her immediate neighbors. And this interpretation is confirmed by Ezekiel 36. And there in the context of the judgment of Edom, God declares to Israel, surely the heathen that are round about you, they shall bear their shame. This is the revised version. Ezekiel 36, verse 7. This leads to the conclusion that Edom, because of its historical perpetual hatred, going back to the time of Esau himself, is representative of all those nations round about Israel who have in the past and in modern times manifested this same animosity towards Israel. Thus, it is suggested that the Edom nations of today are identified as Israel's Arab neighbors, whose characteristics are like those of ancient Edom. It should be carefully noted that in none of these Edom prophecies is there any indication that Edom will destroy Israel. The concept of a latter-day Arab victory over Israel based on these scriptures is not sustainable. There's a footnote here for discussion of this C.D. Stiles. Israel's defeat by Gog or the Arabs, and although he refavors the idea that Edom represents the latter-day manifestation of Gentile power, the discussion contains many useful arguments against the concept of a latter-day Arab victory over Israel. In seeking to set out the details of the latter-day fulfillment of these prophecies, we do well to avoid adopting a position of intransigence that is unable to adjust itself to events as the divine program becomes plain. The following is a suggested way of putting these prophecies together in harmony with the current political situation as it exists in the land, and in harmony with what is further revealed. Edom was to be made desolate, and the Edomite people would cease to exist. This happened in history. However, there would be a latter-day Edom, or Esau, occupying the same geographical relationship to Israel as Edom of old, and this geographical Edom roughly coincides to modern Jordan and part of the Arabian Peninsula. But latter-day Edom is also used in the prophets as a representative nation. It represents a group of nations round about Israel who manifest the same unbrotherly, antagonistic, hateful, vengeful, treacherous attitude towards Israel as Edom of old. These people, sometimes referred to as Edom, Mount Seir, Esau, and sometimes as the people round about, are to receive divine judgment. The instrument of divine judgment against latter-day Edom will be the regathered people of Israel. And it seems that this judgment will take place in two distinct phases. A, before the Gogian invasion. At the time of the Gogian invasion, described in Ezekiel 38, regathered Israel will be dwelling safely without walls, having neither bars nor gates. Further, they are said to be rich in silver and gold, and they have cattle and goods, all the trappings of a prosperous and thriving economic community dwelling in undisturbed peace. Clearly, Israel does not occupy this position at the present time, and this is largely due to the hatred and envy of the nations round about. These grieving thorns and pricking briars have to be removed so that Israel can develop her economy. And the three wars between Israel and her Arab neighbors that have taken place since the State of Israel was established in 48, especially that decisive victory over Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in 67, has seen Israel flying upon the shoulders of the Philistines toward the west, spoiling them of the east together, laying their hand upon Edom and Moab. Isaiah 11. Like an hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheaf, they have devoured all the people round about on the right hand and on the left. Zechariah 12. This was further demonstrated in the conclusive victory against the invading Arab armies in the Yom Kippur War in 1973. And these military victories, which have resulted in Israel being able to negotiate with her Arab neighbors from a position of strength, have led to a formal peace with Egypt and Jordan, a somewhat shaky peace treaty with the Palestinians, and at the time of writing, negotiations towards peace with the Syrians that clearly would involve Lebanon. However, the activities of Islamic terrorists continue, and Judah may yet be called upon to inflict more burning upon the house of Esau. There's certainly no indication that Iraq, that is the Asher or Asser of Psalm 83, will sue for peace. Iraq, more than any of the other neighbors of Israel, still proclaims, "Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance," Psalm 83. It may well be that the business of the 1990 Gulf War remained uncompleted by the United States and her allies because the work of bringing Iraq to her knees is destined to be performed by Israel. Certainly it's difficult to see how Israel could ever be secure, dwelling without walls, having neither bars nor gates, with an antagonistic Iraq within easy missile reach of Israel. That was before the Gogin invasion. Now, B, after the Gogin invasion, having secured peace, Israel would prosper. And the surrounding nations will share her prosperity. But then comes the Gogin invasion, bringing devastation to Israel, as will be seen at chapters 37 and 38. Edom's rivalry, hatred and antagonism suppressed during the period of peace will then burst out afresh. The people round about will take advantage of the situation to expand their borders into that land which they have coveted. And their ambitions, however, will be brought to a dramatic end by the appearance in the earth of Israel's messianic king, who will lead his people into victory against the Gogian aggressor and will at the same time free them forever from the harassment of the people round about, thus fulfilling the relevant parts of Isaiah 34, Obadiah and Joel 3. It is of particular importance to note that the house of Joseph is involved in this final judgment of Edom. Footnote regarding Joseph here. It should be noted that according to Zechariah, it is Judah that devours the people round about. It was shown in chapter 37 that Judah relates to the people in the land, whereas Joseph refers to the Jews who are still scattered. Thus it is Judah, the people of the land, that causes Jerusalem to be inhabited again in her own place, Zechariah 12:6, by devouring the people round about. But it will be the house of Joseph, the dispersed Jews who return after Christ has appeared in his kingdom, who will complete the burning of Edom, as in Obadiah, verse 18. This confirms that it takes place after Christ has appeared in his kingdom. And this will be the time when Edom enters the political wilderness, never again to rise from oblivion. We may now bring this scriptural background to bear on the prophecy of Ezekiel in chapter 35. And that will be in the as previously indicated, the entire section of chapter 35, verses 1 to 13, appears to relate primarily to the desolation of Edom at the hand of the Babylonians. As we have seen, this desolation was completed by the Romans, and at verse 14, the prophet returns to the theme of Israel's restoration, which he has already introduced in chapter 34. There, the time of Israel's return to favor with God is spoken of, the time when the heir to David's throne will be a prince among them. 34:24. The coming blessing of the land of Israel is described. I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in his season. There shall be showers of blessing, and the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth, and the Hebrew is ha-eretz, that is the land. The earth shall yield her increase, and they shall be safe in their land. And it is to this time that Ezekiel now refers in this final section of Edom's future desolation predicted. He had commenced his first prophecy against Mount Seir with the words, "Thus saith the Lord God." These same words are now used to mark a new prophecy. "Thus saith the Lord God." This is verse 14. "When the whole earth," the land, that is, erects rejoiceth, I will make thee desolate. And this is exactly the same message as that found in Joel 3. There we are told that when Israel's mountain shall drop down with wine and the hills shall flow with milk, or as Ezekiel here has it, when the whole land rejoiceth, then Edom shall be a desolate wilderness. And so Ezekiel conveys exactly the same message of future desolation, a message which is developed in the first 15 verses of chapter 36. And the first part of Ezekiel 36 continues the two themes of the desolation of Edom and the restoration of Israel.